This is The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. The Ashland Independent Film Festival starts on April 24th, and today I'm talking about it with the festival's co-director of programming, Richard Herskowitz, as well as filmmakers Gary Lundgren and Richard Green. Richard Herskowitz, I'll start with you. How is AIFF's approach this year different from last year and previous years?
You know that we did our 2024 festival in October of 24. So this was a really rapid turnaround so that we could get ourselves back on the April track, which, you know, our audience really wanted us to do and the board wanted to do. So what that meant was that we didn't do the open call for submissions that we normally did, but rather Aura Johnson, my co-director of programming, and I really curated this program. We attended various film festivals, Sundance, Slam Dance, both of those virtually, and others. Filmmakers sent us work, and from those we selected the the 18 or so programs that film programs that we have planned for this year. It's because of the rapid turnaround. It's not quite the size that it used to be. That it's even a little bit smaller than October. There's still 22 events, and that's quite a lot. But the most important thing is that we're really back in April and intending to return in April 26th for our 25th anniversary festival.
Oh, how exciting. Well, first of all, what a busy few months you and Aura especially have had. Is it your intention to have the festival in spring from now on?
Yes, I believe that's what the board wants. You know, October was a really crowded month for Oregon film festivals, Bend, Klamath Falls, Eastern Oregon. It's really quite a logjam, and it's much healthier for film in Oregon for us to continue to occupy the April position.
Okay. So you say, there's 22 events. Is that how many films will be screened? It's over a 4-day period at Varsity Theater, right?
That's right. There are 18 film programs, including 3 of those are shorts programs and 15 features. And then there are 4 talkbacks. All the film programs are in the Varsity Theater. And the talkbacks are in the AIFF Film Center on Main Street.
Okay, great. That's a cozy little venue. I've enjoyed talkbacks there. Now, this year's festival features several films with Oregon connections. Let's start with the feature-length documentary, I Know Catherine, the Log Lady. It explores Catherine Coulson's extraordinary death and life as her role as Twin Peaks' Log Lady. Richard Green, you directed this. How did this project come to be?
I knew Catherine since I was 20 when I was in Los Angeles coming down from San Francisco. We had been in a large theater company, and I got a job in L.A. and ended up hanging out in Hollywood Hills with Catherine and David Lynch and Jack Nance, and knew them through the years. And when Catherine passed away, I got a call from Donna Dubain, our executive producer on this, who has since passed as well, just telling me what had happened, which is that they had shot Catherine's scenes in her living room because she was too sick to travel, that all the scenes had been rewritten for the Log Lady to not be traveling, be dying of the same disease that Catherine was dying of. Mm-hmm. And they shot it, and 4 days later, she passed. And when I heard that on the day that she passed from Donna Dubain, I thought, this is an amazing story. How did this happen? Why did this happen? Has it ever happened before? And just got real interested.
Let's go to a clip of I Know Catherine, the Log Lady, and we'll hear David Lynch speaking first.
One of my dearest, closest friends is Catherine Coulson, for sure.
Hi, this is Catherine Coulson, C-O-U-L-S-O-N. I'm on hospice. I probably don't have a whole lot longer.
In 1990, Catherine Coulson became an international cult icon as the Log Lady in the groundbreaking television series Twin Peaks.
Catherine was hiding the fact that she was so sick.
It was stage four. Hospice said, "What's your heart's desire?" She said she wanted to finish her work on Twin Peaks.
Such an interesting story. So obviously, with this size of a documentary, you have lots of interviews and archival footage. Who and what can audiences expect to see in this?
Well, I think you can expect to see a portrait of someone who was just incredibly dynamic. It wasn't just the log lady. On camera, she was the log lady. Behind the camera, she pulled focus on Eraserhead, where she learned how to be a first AC. Also worked on two Cassavetes films and Star Trek Wrath of Khan with Nicholas Meyer as director, as first AC. And she also had 22 seasons at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and plays all around the country. So on camera, behind the camera, on stage, and in the community, she was a community leader through her religious affiliation. Extraordinary woman. And what you'll see are her amazing and extraordinarily eloquent friends. Pulitzer Prize-winning playwrights like Robert Schenken, prize-winning playwrights like Lisa Loomer, and maybe David Lynch's final on-screen appearance. I don't know that for sure. Mm-hmm. But we had worked together on Mulholland Drive incredibly intimately. I played the magician in the Club Silencio. We'd known each other so long. When we finally worked together, it was just special. And a couple of years, 20 years later, when I interviewed him for this film, it was the same intimate conversation, and he is so charming and funny and interesting and moving in this movie, as are all of her friends, just incredible people from the cast of Twin Peaks and from many different walks of life.
She certainly did make an impression on those who worked for her. Shankman, you mentioned Robert Shankman. He created new works for her, as did David Lynch, who just passed away himself in January.
Yeah.
And a new fact for me was that the idea of the log lady was actually conceived in 1973 on Eraserhead. I saw that in the, you know, finally in the 90s, and I had no idea that she was originally involved in that.
They were very close. She was going to be the star of this crazy television series. David himself, there's a lovely moment when he just talks about what a stupid idea it was.
Right.
But it was fun to think about.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, he surprised everybody. I don't think Mark Frost knew she was coming up when he had her switching on the lights in the pilot of Twin Peaks. And as Mark says in the movie, it just, you know, when the pilot aired, she was pure gold. They just realized she was very valuable to the show.
Is there a lot of footage from the show? We can expect to see Kyle MacLachlan and
Is. We were able to purchase at a very favorable rate from CBS and Showtime, who own the rights to. CBS has season one and two and the Bravo intros, which are all Log Lady intros, beautiful. Mm. And Showtime, we were able to get. I think we have a total of about 10 minutes of actual Twin Peaks footage in the film, and then many other performances from Catherine in various situations.
Wonderful. Now, Richard Green, you also have a talkback, one of the ones that will be at the festival, on working with Catherine. Can you tell us when that's scheduled, and do you anticipate certain questions that typically come up at these Q&As?
I believe that's scheduled for Sunday. Mr. Herskovitz here, Richard, can tell us better than I.
Yes, that's exactly right. And at Carpenter Hall and the Shakespeare Festival.
Great.
The kind of questions that I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, continue.
Well, you asked me about the kind of questions I might anticipate. People are fascinated by her relationship with David and their experience meditating together. They're also fascinated by how the film came about. It's been a long process, starting with that first phone call for me, and then a few years later doing a crowdfunding Kickstarter to raise the money. We have 1,752 backers across the world. And a couple of the backers and myself tripled the budget off of that because it took a long time to make this. There was, you know, any kind of, I guess, biography where you really need to sort of research that first couple of years is really just sort of putting the story together.
How long did it take to put this together?
So we did crowdfunding in June, I think it was, of 2018. So that's 7 years. I actually shot the interviews with David prior to that in September of 2017. So it's, you know, for me, a solid 8 years of just working through COVID, and, you know, our initial limited budget meant that I was doing all of the editing and everything myself. And it took a long time to make this thing work. We have a 3-part miniseries that we brought down to this feature, which we think is the best way to introduce Catherine in this light to the public. But eventually I hope to be able to give them the larger story as well.
Okay. Yeah, these big projects do take a lot of perseverance. Just a side note, you mentioned that they meditated together, David and Catherine. I know that David was a proponent or a big practitioner of TM, Transcendental. Mm-hmm. Is that what you meant by her religious affiliation?
No, actually, they did meditate together, and she stayed with it all of her life, not quite as dedicated to everyday meditations as David was, apparently. But Catherine was raised a Catholic. She grew up in Disneyland. Her father was the head of PR. And at some point later in her life, she converted to Judaism and married a rabbi, and they went up to Ashland, Oregon together. He became the rabbi at the local temple. She was what's called the Rebbetzin, is the rabbi's wife, who really is the outreach to the community. And, you know, her reputation in Ashland was even larger than that. She was the person the Welcome Committee, Catherine Coulson Welcome Committee, would publish pamphlets of where people could get things when new cast members came up. This was a woman who organized people and brought them together. And it, in my opinion, helped form David Lynch's renown for treating his actors, his cast, his crew, and everybody who's working with him just really personally, so everybody feels a part of the project. And I've always believed that that's maybe Catherine's influence from her days in theater and also at Disneyland.
It's interesting you called her a sort of a one-woman welcoming committee. I just watched the Ashland Film Fest trailer that features her, and she's there on Pioneer, you know, near the bricks. And she really does just look so warm and welcoming. And as a matter of fact, we have in studio here Gary Lundgren, who shot that footage for the trailer. Gary, you appear in I Know Catherine the Log Lady, and you worked with her often. What insights can you share on the woman and the work?
Oh, wow. Catherine was just such a lovely person. Like, I loved her. I miss her. I was lucky to work with her on two movies, and I was sort of a fanboy at first because I loved Twin Peaks. But then she became a friend, and, you know, you feel like, wow, Catherine really likes me. She's so cool. But then you realize she likes everyone. And it's true. It's everyone who knew her felt special to be her friend and work with her, you know.
Sounds like someone that saw the best in people.
Absolutely. And I think Richard's film really captures Catherine, you know, and I think audiences are going to be really, they're going to love getting to know her.
By the way, what movies did you work with her on?
She came in and auditioned for Calvin Marshall, the film that brought me to Southern Oregon, and I couldn't believe when she walked in to audition. I was like, you got the part, you know. And also Redwood Highway. I filmed the Criterion Collection interview with her for Eraserhead. That's on the Blu-ray. And then I helped film her role in Twin Peaks season 3, you know, 4 days before she passed away.
Oh. Well, you're part of a special closing night event at the Ashland Film Festival. It's called An Evening with Bruce Campbell, Ida Giron, if I'm pronouncing that right, and your wife, Annie Lundgren. What's the topic of that conversation?
Yeah, Bruce and Ida have a new film, and Annie and I have a new film, and they weren't quite ready to premiere. Their work's in progress. So we're going to talk about just working creatively as a couple in filmmaking, us four. And then also show advanced clips to our movies. I have a film called Pelican that was filmed in Gold Beach last year. And Bruce is going to show clips to his film, which is, I believe, Ernie and Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just going to be a look at Southern Oregon filmmaking. That's, you know, movies that are being developed and crewed and filmed right here.
Okay, wonderful. The business is booming here locally. My guests are Richard Herskowitz, a co-director of the Ashland Independent Film Fest, and filmmakers Gary Lundgren and Richard Green. This is The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. We're back with The Creative Way on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney. I've been talking with filmmakers Gary Lundgren and Richard Green, as well as Richard Herskowitz, a co-director of the Ashland Independent Film Festival. And let's go to the Pride Award winner, Sandy Dubowski, with The Sabbath Queen. We actually have a clip. Sabbath Queen is a remarkable 20-year journey in the life of a 39th generation Orthodox rabbi and a drag queen. Here's the trailer from Sabbath Queen.
I'm Amichai.
I broke the law. According to our family story, I descend from 38 consecutive generations of rabbis.
My grandfather, who died so brutally.
My uncle, the chief rabbi of Israel.
I feel sorrow for a Jew who doesn't follow tradition.
In my early 20s, I was publicly outed, and I did not give my consent.
Okay, that was Sabbath Queen. Richard, can you fill in some of the story on that film?
Yes. This is a film made by Sandy Dubowski, who is winning our Pride Award this year. And he worked on this film for 21 years. The rabbi, Amichai Lau Lavi, is actually Sandy Dubowski's rabbi. In New York, he's called the drag queen rabbi. He's descended from a long line of Jewish and Israeli rabbis. And he was outed against his will when he was younger. And he emigrated from Israel to New York, created a drag character he called Rebbetzin Hadassah Gross when he came there. He also got very involved in the radical fairy movement. Anyway, ultimately, he decided to become a rabbi himself and started an alternative synagogue in New York. So that's what the film is about, and Sandy Dubowski will be here to present it.
Wonderful. Now, another film touching on social issues is The Librarians. Tell us about that one.
The Librarians is really about the current campaign to ban books around the country and the librarians who are mobilizing to fight this. The film was actually produced by somebody with Ashland connections, Janique Robillard. His mother was the person who hired me at the Ashland Film Festival in 2015. Anyway, the filmmaker, director Kim Snyder, will be here and presenting the film, which premiered at Sundance just a few months ago.
Okay, I see Kim Snyder not only directed The Librarians, but also Death by Numbers, I believe. And that's part of one of the shorts program that you're presenting that'll include Death by Numbers, Chasing Rue, and Eternal Father.
Yes, all those films were on the Academy Award shortlist for Best Documentary, and two of the filmmakers, including Skye Fitzgerald from Portland, will be here for that program. Kim's film, Death by Numbers, is about a victim in a school shooting, or a student in a school that was a victim of a school shooting. And her name is Sam Fuentes, and she became an activist for gun control. She is actually also coming with Kim and will be attending that screening.
Okay, that humanitarian trilogy, that's a short program that'll have 50 Feet from Syria, Hunger Ward, and Lifeboat.
That's the second shorts program that Skye Fitzgerald is presenting. The first one includes Death by Numbers. This one is three films by Skye Fitzgerald. He calls the humanitarian trilogy. It's really about the refugee crisis in various parts of the globe. Guy Fitzgerald is an acclaimed filmmaker, been nominated for Academy Awards several times, and we're featuring his work this year. He's also putting together a talkback on the subject of composing scores for documentaries, and he's bringing down two composers from Portland with him for that discussion.
Oh, right. I see something called The Beauty of the Score.
Yes, that's it.
That's wonderful.
We try to have talkbacks on various subjects of filmmaking. I don't think we ever covered film scoring before, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
I am too. That's a whole art unto itself, film scoring.
That's right.
That's wonderful. Well, let's talk about some other films in the festival that have local ties. You mentioned Sky is Portland-based. What about The Whole Story that was filmed in Mount Shasta?
That was the director based in Mount Shasta is Elijah Sullivan. He's coming, and Audie Carlisle, who shot the film. She's one of my favorite filmmakers in the region. Mm. We've been featuring her work the last few years. Anyway, it's about a 60-foot hole that appeared in Mount Shasta and the investigation into what that was about. In a way, it connects with a couple of other films in the program, which are sort of true crime films. In this case, the crime is who dug the hole and what was the nefarious purpose of its digging. It's a kind of a playful documentary. That's true about another true crime film in the program called Suburban Fury, but it's something Aura and I noticed at a number of films at Sundance this year were really playing with the genre of the true crime film playful, humorous ways.
Oh, that I was going to ask you about that. Over the years, you've shaped so many film festivals and media arts projects in various states. You probably presented thousands of screenings and exhibitions at this point. I was wondering if you were noticing any trends in recent years in submissions.
The documentaries keep getting better and better. A film like Sabbath Queen, which was 21 years in the making. I mean, they're really the passion projects of filmmakers. In many ways, a lot of the best ones I see sort of play with the boundaries between fiction and documentary. That's true about The Whole Story, and that's true about Suburban Fury and some of the other great documentaries we show. We really make you question what's truth, what isn't, how we're being persuaded to believe a point of view of a filmmaker. Anyway, that's one of the trends I've been seeing.
Now, with that back to The Whole Story, did conspiracy theories grow out of that, or was it always treated as a crime?
Yes, and the film investigates them and sort of follows some of the conspiracies, and you never quite know what's real and what isn't, what's staged and what's true. Is it a documentary or isn't it? Very creative film. It premiered at the Slamdance Film Festival a few months ago, and really happy that we're going to get to show it.
Wonderful. Let's keep digging into some of these local offerings. We have one called Raising Anaya, and this was produced by Chris Lucas, who is actually an assistant professor and program coordinator in Southern Oregon University's Digital Cinema Department, and you're giving him an award this year. Talk about that and his work.
Chris Lucas is getting our Lee Fuchsman Local Filmmaker Award. He's the third recipient of this award. Lee Fuchsman was the vice president at Coming Attractions, who was really instrumental in the development of the film festival. She's sorely missed. He's been involved as a film producer and a film professor, been really inspirational to many students at SOU, including our new managing director, Nicole Gullickson, who's going to be presenting him the award. I think other students will be there. Anyway, he produced this wonderful film called Raising Anaya about a dancer in Houston, a young dancer who was affected by a hurricane and the flood that followed. And she created a dance performance in response to that. And this dance performance really explores topics of environmental justice and larger topics beyond the hurricane. So not only will Chris, who produced it, be here, but the director, John Feige, will be here. And Anaya herself is coming.
One
thing I really... I love when that happens at the film festival, that the subjects of the films appear. And so that's the case with Sam Fuentes in Death by Numbers, and it's the case with Anaya in Raising Anaya.
Now, she was 16 years old in the movie. Has much time passed since then? Is she much older now?
You know, I believe it's about 3 years later. I think she's still a young woman, but the film, this is the film just premiered in Washington, D.C., and I believe it's its second showing, but it's early in its release.
Right. Well, that's such a feat for such a young artist to choreograph and help produce this, tackling something as big as the legacy of environmental pollution in her Houston neighborhood.
That's right.
So
that's,
let's see. You're giving another award, the Visionary Lens Award, to Brittany Shine, and she's bringing the movie Seeds.
That's right. Seeds is about African-American farmers and in the South. And this film won the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival. And last week it won the Grand Jury Prize at the Full Frame Festival in Durham, North Carolina. So there's probably no more acclaimed documentary feature in the past year than Seeds. So we're really honored to have it, and that Brittany Shine is coming out. We're giving her our Visionary Lens Award as an emerging filmmaker, and not only will she be attending all the screenings of Seeds, but we're going to do a conversation and talk back with her in the Film Center, in which she's going to show the two short films she made that preceded Seeds. Just one thing I want to add about Seeds is it has the most gorgeous black and white cinematography. I'm just a sucker for black and white, and this film is just a knockout.
Okay. Let's try to squeeze in one more trailer here. Let's see. Let's play Sultana's Dream. And before we play it, can you set it up for us a bit?
Yeah, people won't be able to tell from the audio clip, but this is an animated film.
Yeah.
It's inspired by this feminist, science fiction story written in 1905 in Bengal called Sultana's Dream. And in the film, it's about a young Spanish artist who travels to India in search of the author of this 1905 book, which envisioned a feminist utopia called Ladyland. Anyway, beautifully animated with watercolor backgrounds and cutout animation. It's just a knockout.
I can attest to that. I saw the trailer and it is gorgeous. So here's a clip from the trailer of Sultana's Dream.
Here, we do the logical thing. Instead of locking away women to keep them safe, we lock up the hungry, ravening beasts.
The world appears to them as an inexhaustible box of surprises.
Nothing you can say can pull me away from you. I love you.
You are very quiet today.
I am not too quiet.
All right, that was a clip from Sultana's Dream playing at the Ashland Film Festival. Gary, we have about a minute left. Your movie, Phoenix, Oregon, was the number one movie in America during the pandemic. And last year you brought us Above the Trees, which featured JPR's Danielle Kelly. You work as a screenwriter, cinematographer. What else are you working on now? You're going to talk about a little bit in the talk back.
Yeah, Pelican is a movie we shot last year in Gold Beach, and it's kind of consumed my life the last year. It's a drama about two old fishing friends that meet up with their therapist for a weekend because they're having some life struggles. That's the thing. I'm also working on Crew Experience at SOU this year, helping students make a short film.
Terrific. Okay, that's it for today's Jefferson Exchange. JeffExchange.org is our website where you can find these conversations and more. My guests were Richard Herskowitz, Gary Lundgren, and Richard Green. I'm Vanessa Finney.